Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson in balmy Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Woohoo!
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in unseasonably warm New Jersey.
Hey, it's great to have everybody together in our unseasonably, actually, we're saying it's unseasonably cold here in Southern California. We're like getting out parkas. It was like 50 today when we took the puppy for a walk.
That's funny.
Of course, that's the early, early morning, pre-6 a.m. Now it'll warm up to, you know, 80. It'll be good. And Minneapolis, this is your first podcast being recorded from your new home, correct, Sandy?
Exactly.
Does she sound different?
Do I sound different? Do I have an even stronger Minnesota accent?
Yeah.
Is it coming back?
Well, I'm sure there's a ton of things happening as we, we've only got one more episode in this year. We've got one, the beginning of December.
Penultimate episode. I try to use that word whenever I can. It's very rare that I can.
I'm going to look up the official definition of that here.
While second to last.
Oh, okay. What's happening?
I am doing a lot of InDesign work lately for a number of clients, but one of the clients I've got a cool project with, they have an event space, which is this former residential estate. So they've asked me to redesign a set of, you know, bunch of promotional materials and everything's for it, but it includes a couple of maps, directional maps and floor maps. So I'm, you know, up to my eyeballs in InDesign, literally recreating maps, which is kind of fun and different.
So, well, first of all, in InDesign, are you doing the map layouts in Illustrator and then bringing in the elements and then doing all the labeling and whatnot in InDesign? Or
so far, I'm doing everything in Illustrator.
Oh, okay. And then, yeah, layout.
And then dump in, yeah, layout. Yep. And
okay, you guys, you already know that I'm moving. I moved, and I'm technically in Stillwater, Minnesota. It's east of the Twin Cities, closer to St. Paul than Minneapolis, but we on a nice, quiet cul-de-sac. It's really, really nice. Yeah.
It's great. Yep.
And you got to move before the snow. This is great.
Yes, no snow. It was very cold and windy the day the movers were here, but otherwise it's actually been warm since we got here.
Okay, so what's happening? I guess I would say holiday decorations. You know, we start with our annual pumpkin carving party, and the house just kind of morphs from Halloween to fall time decor for Thanksgiving to Christmas, and Christmas is kind of inside and out. We really, really, really enjoy the holidays, and then the whole house, is part of it. So it's, you know, kind of a family tradition. It's one of my favorites, and yeah, we just finished. The outside is all phenomenal and stuff. And let's hear in the design studio. What's happening? What can I say? Things are a bit calmer, and there is no complaints right now. We are, I'm taking advantage of the time to finally execute some major deals. We're updating our websites. I'll put that in plural because it's actually going to span 6 websites. There's a few of them that are brand new, all under the TLC Services branding. And it just takes a lot of effort.
You are crazy. That is so cool.
So I've been curating all the content, all the outlines for all the, like, literally the everything from the kind of a wireframe, a verbal wireframe to content for each section. So we're executing on that. The Presentation Podcast website does not change. I know that's kind of a TLC Creative Us thing, but it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. It's, it's branded PowerPoint orange, and yeah, that's its own thing. The other thing happening is actually still holiday stuff. We have holiday animations, and Sandy, I know you do an awesome holiday animation.
I'm behind schedule. Oh.
Yeah, you've had a few things going on this season. We give everybody, our entire design team has 20 hours to create their PowerPoint Christmas animation. When they're all finished, well, they're all finished at this point. I'm just kind of compiling them all, mastering them into a soon-to-be-released TLC Christmas animation. So, you know, we put a music track behind it and export them all as videos. But everything is done in PowerPoint. So it's kind of an internal learning curve as well as a demonstration of things that can be done. So very excited. I'm taking advantage of the 3D modeling animation for a section of mine. A little candy cane dance is happening.
You know what? So that's really cool. And that's one reason I'm not using Morph or 3D, because I gift my PowerPoint presentation to anyone who wants to use it and customize it. Again, I'm behind schedule, so people are, oh, I hope I can get it out.
So you're like going old school.
I have to go old school. Yes, I have. I mean, I originally started this with PowerPoint 2003.
Okay, news. There's quite a, I mean, it's the end of the year, but there's a lot happening in the presentation world that I've seen. Sandy, can we just start with you?
Sure. Well, it's groundbreaking. Last month, the Presentation Guild launched 375 presentation standards. And what will happen eventually is that these standards will be turned into certification. The plan is this: people can get, they'll be aware of what the standards are. They can get training from anywhere they want. The Guild does not plan on training, at least in the short term, but we will implement the testing and give you a certification. There are three levels, and I cannot speak to them right now, the top being master. I think the bottom, Troy, do you remember?
Hey, I got to be a consultant on these. Yes. I'm very proud and honored. But to tell you, just so everybody knows how much they value my input, they didn't go with my names. I wanted Ninja, Super Stealth, PowerPoint, Presentation Assassin. They're like, no, we'll go with these. Yeah, thank you very much.
Specialist, expert, and master. We've started with PowerPoint specifications so that people can test to PowerPoint. Logic is that 95% of the world uses PowerPoint. Next, we will expand to other tools, including Prezi, Keynote. We've already started on some.
I think it's really great. I think it's really good. Just to clarify, and at Nolan, on our last episode, which I know we recorded a while ago, Tom, I think everybody participated. We kind of had a discussion. This is a standards for using the tool, not design, because you can't. Correct. In my opinion, you can't standard what is
good design.
Well, I mean, you can come up with techniques and you can come up with principles, but you can't say what's good and bad because there's a number of designers and artists that would have been, well, they probably were thrown out, and then people realize that's good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a standards for ability to use the tool, right, in is the way I view it and explain it.
Exactly.
You know, there's a new one for PowerPoint that they're setting a new standard, if you will. There is, at least it's on the insider beta. I won't even say what we're calling it now because it keeps changing. But there's a new video export. So if you go under export and video and you have three dropdowns, you're on what's standard, 1080p being your highest. They've the PowerPoint is expanded to a fourth one, which now supports 4K resolution output from PowerPoint, frame by frame accurate. It's pretty cool.
That's really.
Now you're going to be making use of that a lot, Troy, right?
But yeah, I'm excited about it. We'll use it. We're doing a lot of, we replace some simple After Effects elements or segments with PowerPoint, and then we export it and drop it into the video project. Done.
Nice.
Microsoft Word now has something called Resume Assistant, right? Now, I don't know too much about this, but this is part of this sort of AI sort of help you kind of, what's the thing in PowerPoint? The starter?
Quick starter. Oh, yeah.
Quick starter.
Yeah. So it's all this sort of like in this direction of trying to help you, you know, write your content. Troy, you know a little bit more about it, right?
It's the first collaboration of LinkedIn and Microsoft. So that, you know, LinkedIn obviously has all kinds of resume knowledge and expertise and probably has the biggest repository of resumes in the world, I would think. They took all that, made an artificial intelligence type of engine, and it basically, you can access it directly through Microsoft Word. So within Word, there's this thing called Resume Assistant, and you can start typing a resume and it'll start giving you recommendations on that's not a good phrase. That was a really good phrase in the 90s. Let's update you to... It's kind of cool. I mean, it's collaboration. It didn't come to PowerPoint, but it's a Microsoft Office thing.
LinkedIn is my resume. I mean, when people ask for it, I send them to my LinkedIn site.
That's a great thing to say.
Yes.
Okay, Office 365, Microsoft's move to subscription-based software. It first became available back in 2011. Now, 6 years in, Office 365, I would say it's established. It's a long-term solution for corporations down to individuals. It goes kind of beyond the quote-unquote office apps by encompassing SharePoint, Teams, Groups, unified communications through Skype, and just so much more. Myself, Nolan, and Sandy, well, we thought that a conversation talking about how we use Office 365, because we're not large corporate entities, kind of what are the secrets we've found in it and making the most of it, it would be an interesting and full of information conversation for everyone. So here we go.
Okay, but before we get started, I wanted to just do a little bit of differentiation between Office 365 in 2016. I think it can be a little confusing. People say they have the latest version of PowerPoint, and there are kind of two latest versions of PowerPoint. It's really confusing.
Right.
So,
well, and then there's the latest version on Mac and the latest version on Windows, the latest version on web, the latest version.
You know, Insider Fast and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly.
The simplest way is you're on a subscription or you bought it, like one-time purchase.
Yep. That's the key difference. The details behind the subscription is that you get a fully installed Office applications. You get Word, Excel, PowerPoint, everything. And you can install Office 365 across multiple devices. I use it on my PC. It's installed on my Mac, which I don't use very often. I use it on my Android tablets. I have Android phones. I have it on my iPad. I don't have an iPhone, so I can't speak to that.
It works good there. I use it all the time.
When you have an active 365 prescription, subscription.
Yes, doctor.
Sometimes you need a prescription.
You do, yep. Here's the best thing, and you get the most up-to-date version of Office applications constantly. And how fast you get those depends on what you subscribe to.
And what Microsoft wants to call it this quarter, because they keep changing the name of the beta program, basically.
I call it Insider Fast, and I think it's not called that anymore. And then there's Insider Slow, and it's not called that anymore. Basically, you get it faster, slower, or when everybody else gets it, right?
Super guaranteed stable. Probably stable. Good luck, stable.
There you go. There you go. Very good.
We'll get to that in a bit. And then the opposite, the other way, is the one-time purchase, which I think that's the good terminology for it. And the current, that's basically you buy a box, you got it, that's it. So with that, you get security updates, which is good, but you don't get any feature updates. And the most current versions of that are Office 2016, both for Windows and for Mac. Yeah, so that's it. And I just time and again, I'm finding people on these sort of standalone things and just saying, I used to hate subscription. You know, when I saw it coming, I was like, oh boy.
More money.
But now, more money. But it is, you're getting value. Mm-hmm. Like, again, we don't work for Microsoft. You are getting value with it. And it just makes the money. Just do it. Just do it. And I think, it used to be $99, or maybe it was a Black Friday thing, but I just saw it was $80.
Even within the subscription, there's right. options.
Did Sandy, did you also mention that you can install a 365 on up to five computers?
Oh, no, I missed that, but thanks for,
Office 365, what are you talking, I'm I personally a huge proponent of Office 365. For the cloud email server alone, I moved to Office 365 before it was actually released to the public. It was, being an MVP advantage at that point. And it was just basically to get rid of the POP3 or the, what do you call the other?
IMAP,
IMAP emails.
Yeah.
It was just the ability to actually have a server in the cloud and be able to get to set it up on any device, any computer. And it was really cool because you send an email on your phone, it shows up in your sent email on your desktop. So that was like that right then and there. That's when we were just starting to grow the team, and email was, I was like investing way too much time trying to figure out email for everybody. I kind of at the point now where TLC Creative, we have Office 365 running everything for all the apps, email, Skype, all of Office, even our fleet of show computers are now on Office 365. I kind of held off on that for a while because those have to work. They have to be stable.
All right. Well, let's talk about features of Office 365, things you get with it and things you don't. And the biggest one, we probably would agree, is Morph.
I would agree.
Yes. If you don't have Office 365, you don't have Morph.
So on the technical side, Morph works, but it just becomes fade, transitions. It doesn't actually morph. That's if you're on a non-Office 365 plan. So you can create them. Other people will sort of see something, but not what you envisioned.
But that's a key thing. If you're doing this for clients or whatever, you need, because very often they'll say, oh, yeah, I see the animation, but they're not really seeing it. So you kind of need to determine that, and determining whether somebody is on 365 is not always the easiest thing to do. But
side note on that, we just recently had the same scenario where they were seeing something, but I was pre-convinced it wasn't what we thought they should be seeing. So we exported a video of that that animation segment and said, this is what we're seeing. And they went, that's great. I'm like, oh, okay. You definitely were just seeing fade transitions or something. So
Morph Morph is on the Mac and the PC. It's one of these big features that they did roll out on both. And for me, it's really it's kind of changed the way I animate, and it's gotten me animating things a lot more.
I guess we should say that the other one, another feature that's kind of right in there is Zoom, which is basically customs up. It's an upgrade to custom shows, but it uses Morph. So if you don't have Office 365 and you set up Morph, it just becomes a fade, which in the case of Zoom really doesn't look that great because it counts on that whole Morph transition.
Right.
Okay, another topic, PowerPoint specific, Office 365 provides.
Well, how about Ivy charts or new charts in general? I know in 2015, Microsoft unveiled a set of new charts. They're supposed to give us more ways to explore data and tell rich stories.
You're a marketing person, aren't you?
Rich stories.
For an agency.
Yes, exactly. But I don't know if all of those were in 2015 were IV charts. No. Nolan, I think you're...
There's six charts. Maybe there's seven, but it's basically waterfall, histogram, Pareto, box and whisker, tree map, and the never should be used sunburst. You said Ivy charts. Ivy is like the code name for it, so it doesn't mean anything. I think it's actually an acronym, so it's a little confusing. But this is sort of the next generation. The basically there's a new charting engine. They're creating charting in a different way, and that's called Ivy. So the first six that they've used that language or whatever system with are these. Now they are only on the PC. You can view them backwards compatible and on the Mac, but you can't edit them on those. So they just show up as pictures. And on top of that, they still feel a little first generation, that there are certain things you can't do with them that you can do with other charts. And we'll talk about this in our next year-end episode.
You had high hopes that they were on the right track.
And I know. I want to still believe they're on the right track, but they're just not moving on the track. So, and I've seen no clients use these features. I mean, I was just at a client the other day, training them, and they used ThinkCell, which is this plugin for Excel. And the primary reason they use it is for waterfall charts, which is fine. Makes sense. There are different plugins, you know, let you do waterfall charts or you can hack them. But I said to them, so you're using them for waterfall charts. I understand you need that. But do you know that if you convinced IT or whatever, you know, to upgrade you to the latest within Office 365, tree maps or waterfall charts are built in?
Talk about a marketing guy.
Yeah, they had absolutely no idea. And my sense is, they're not like that. I mean, and that's there's a lot of issues in that sentence I just said. But they're not really gaining traction, which is unfortunate.
I think adoption is an issue.
But another thing to go back to sort of these different versions, you can have Office 365 in an enterprise setting and you still don't have Morph, you still don't have Ivy charts, you still don't have these things because your IT is not... turn them off or never even upgraded to begin with, that because they're all these like they're different levels of upgrading when it comes to enterprise and also the just ability to turn any feature off on top of it. So that's a whole other thing we won't get into. But let's talk about another sort of major feature that I will give Microsoft credit on, that because they have been improving it. It's not like they just dropped it and ran. They have been improving it since launch, and it is Mac and PC, and that's Designer. So Designer is a weird feature because usually it just pops up on you. And if it doesn't pop up on you, you don't realize that it's even there or that it doesn't always work with every layout. So it's a little bit of like a surprise to you. I mean, you can force and you can intentionally use it, but essentially Designer is again, putting us out of business, right? You create your layout, you put your header, your text, your whatever, you put images onto your slide. And then the moment you do, a sidebar pops up with little thumbnails of slide design ideas using your content. It says, hey, you've got two photos and a couple of sentences. You should design it this way. And if you click it, boom, that your slide becomes that design with live elements and things like that. So it's very cool and it has gotten better.
The concept and the actual use of it are pretty amazing. I mean, and you're right, it's a tool that they're still investing time in. It's getting better. I think the design aesthetics of it and the ability to take and create visual billboards of your content is pretty amazing. I'm not too fond of their little timeline-y thing.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you, either of you use Timeline?
I played with it briefly, and maybe I didn't play that out. You know, the other thing that you mentioned, Noel, is it the pop-up pane or that little pop-out pane? You know, designer, can you offer you these options? It can kind of become annoying.
Yeah. You can turn it off, but it...
I will say that in February of this year, I put a blog post on where to turn it off because we don't use Microsoft templates. So it kind of is, in essence, not functional or helpful for us. But that pane pops up no matter what, no matter what template. What it really should do is say, I recognize this is a template I can work with, so I'll give you the option.
But it's, you know, it's not for everybody. And it you know, you're right that it doesn't. If you have a custom template, it's not going to understand the design aesthetic always and that you always want the boxes to be this way or whatever. But for the average user, it is leaps and bounds ahead of what they could potentially do on their own and sort of do instantly. So I really haven't used it very often, but but when it does pop up, I look at the designs and I'm like, That's not bad. Yeah. Like that's not the kind of thing I actually might do, you know, not in this case, cause I was about to design it my own way, but the designs are really not bad. And I was just demoing it to, a family member the other day, over Thanksgiving, because, you know, he was like, I'm not a designer. I can't do anything, but I have to make these presentations. I say, just dump it in and see what it gives you. You know, if it's something
Look
good, use it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I've always said that people make bad presentations because they see bad presentations. And if you're in this little bubble of you open up the program and you don't watch TED Talks, you've never seen any of the work we do. Like, if you've never seen a good presentation, if your professors and all your colleagues make crappy presentations, but suddenly you put your bullet points in and designer pops up and you're like, whoa, like I didn't even conceive that PowerPoint could look like that. To Troy's point, I think that's a good thing.
Now, I want to clarify something. You just said put your bullet points in. And usually it's when you insert a photo, designer pops up. But there is also the option, if you type in bullet points that PowerPoint recognizes as being a timeline, you will get a timeline pop-up.
And like a couple
designer.
Of variations on the timeline, which I think is the cool thing. It shows the options. I just have a hard time with the way they're laid out. And I don't think from the audience perspective, they're always, I'll say, practical. But it is pretty cool to interpret that stuff because it's not a timeline list. It's actually converting a bullet list, right, Sandy? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's more like a process or process, it puts it into a timeline. I think the integration of SmartArt, again, I think SmartArt actually increased our design, our ability to make design recommendations. I'm not a big proponent of SmartArt itself because I think their styling is a little bit flat and sometimes not practical for the amount of text, but it increased the ability or awareness that there are better ways to lay it out than just a bunch of bullets. And it seems like that timeline thing is the first step of integrating SmartArt into like a designer, you know, automated artificial intelligence type of guess. And I don't know, I think it's going to get better. I really do. I think they're putting a lot of work into it.
Sure. It will.
The other thing they're working on is icons. Icons are new.
Yeah, that was a huge, huge welcome addition. Not on the Mac, of course, yet, but on the PC, you now have sort of updated clip art. I mean, some people call it that, right? Where it's tasteful icons, iconography that you can pull in, and then they're actual shapes, so you can recolor them and everything, so they're not just PNGs.
Well, we should talk about SVG. I mean, SVG is a huge addition. Scalable vector graphic, SVG, huge addition. Think of vector like Adobe Illustrator. Everything Illustrator creates is vector-based. PowerPoint, you could also say that their shapes are vector-based. In other words, they can be resized without any, from small to super huge without any resolution or quality changes. PowerPoint really needed a vector image format to be realistic in today's design world. And icons. So if you have icons, if you have insert icons, you have SVG support. That's the way I always tell people to check it.
That's a good way. Yeah.
You want to guess what my biggest advantage of my biggest add to 365 this year, as well as, what's the coolest thing going?
What do you got?
I wonder.
Oh, 3D model support. Of course. I'm so excited.
Of course.
I mean, this alone to me is a reason to move to Office 365, just to be able to insert 3D models. And you know, this is a really interesting thing because I've been exploring a lot of the online presentation apps lately in my spare time. But a couple of them actually support 3D models. And it's, you know, it's like, okay, this is becoming a bigger thing. But at least the two I'm thinking of right now, they insert, they support adding a 3D model and you can interact with it, which is really cool on the slide. So you can move your mouse and you can rotate and spin it, but they don't have an animation type of setting to actually, you know, magically move it around. It's, you know, it's interaction, but it's just the model. It's not like you can have a model and other elements on it. In PowerPoint's case, it's a Z order element. I can put a 3D model in and I can put PowerPoint text on top of it for labels or anything else. I can put other boxes. I can do, we have a 3D model blog post coming out later this month. And it's of a, it's one of the designers did, it's of a 3D model of a gingerbread house, and it's how to make a gingerbread house. And they have PowerPoint text arrows and lines and call outs. And it's just this fun little animation that probably only took about 25 minutes to build the whole slide set. But it's because you can layer in all the other things. So it's not just a 3D model can be added. It's a 3D model can be animated using Morph right now across slides. And you can add other PowerPoint content. I think it's huge. I mean, I'm pretty excited about it.
What happens when you, for backward compatibility?
Oh, it, I think it's the same thing as everything else. It just becomes a ping image, static ping image, which makes obviously transitions be a problem. Again, Office 365, if you want the ability to use them, it's there. So let's just step aside PowerPoint because that's our world. What other Office 365 things does everybody use? Because there's so much more to it than just apps or traditional apps,
that's
I should say.
Yeah, 365. Yeah, I don't use a ton of like all those features that, I mean,
SharePoint?
Yeah, I mean, I don't play in SharePoint. No. So do you guys?
Neither. No, I don't.
Oh my gosh.
Not that I don't want to, I just have no need at this point.
So here's the problem. I find this to be a huge problem. We do leverage SharePoint. SharePoint, I think, was really daunting before 2010. We have integrated the use of SharePoint at TLC into a lot of things, but it's not, I mean, it makes our company work, but it's not the daunting stuff. We have shared calendars. So example, we have a project calendar that just lists off all the travel projects. We have another one for the staff schedule, so everybody knows what their schedule is. We have, and what you do is they seamlessly show up in Outlook. So everybody's Outlook, you can turn on and off those calendars. That's SharePoint. What else do we do? We have tons of information, a lot of documents, like our core template sets. They're all on SharePoint. So basically, it's just a central repository of information that everybody on our team can access. Our SharePoint use is information and storage. It's not the, hey, we're going to build an app with a database that pulls up this and this information.
So then how is that different? Let's tell our listeners how that's different from OneDrive.
Okay, first of all, who uses OneDrive?
I don't.
Me?
I'm a Dropbox guy.
Okay.
Do you use OneDrive? I do. I use one personal OneDrive though.
Okay. I believe it's accurate to say, now I'm not on the technical side of this one, so don't quote me on this 100%, but I believe it's accurate to say that all files added to SharePoint are actually using OneDrive for Business. It's just kind of OneDrive without the OneDrive interface.
Okay.
We don't use OneDrive a whole lot for file sharing like we do with Dropbox or Box, Hightail. I've been using it lately, though, for actually all my the LinkedIn articles I'm working on. I actually have decided to put those on OneDrive. It's really easy. I open up, in this case, I'm working on Microsoft Word. Open up Word, just say save to OneDrive, and ask me if I want my personal or my business one. I put it under the business one. I don't know what the real difference is, but this way I can edit them on my phone, on my iPad, on my computer, easier than me moving the one file around. I've also added usually the PowerPoint, the PowerPoint document I'm working on that kind of correlates with that article. So like I have a new one, hopefully it'll be released next week. And it'll be the PowerPoint mistakes series I'm doing, but this one's all about editing, you know, 10 tips for editing in PowerPoint that people don't realize they're making a mistake about. So I've been using it that way. Is that how you use it, Sandy? Is it for accessing documents?
Accessing documents wherever I go. I have it on. Exactly the same way. But it's also, and I don't know if you, I guess you don't have to have OneDrive to be collaborating.
Oh, that's actually a really good point, Nolan. You will use OneDrive.
Because when we do our, you will force me.
You will.
I force you to.
When we do our, we've been talking about that episode where we're going to do a PowerPoint collaboration. Yeah. You know, yes. We're all going to use the collaboration tools. That is putting PowerPoint onto a OneDrive folder.
Dropbox, yeah.
And do you use the sync folder thing?
Yeah, by definition, it's See,
that's the feature I actually am scared of. I kind of like having two copies. I want one on my computer and one out there. Therefore, if one gets deleted, I have another option.
Because Dropbox has versioning and deleted files, and you can always go back, and
And you can back it up with Carbonite. I mean, that's what I do.
So OneDrive, see, Nolan, you will use it. You just don't know you're using it.
I love being forced into stuff.
I talked about email. What do you guys say about email?
I have a separate Exchange account. Yeah, I mean, I pay $4 a month for Microsoft to host my email accounts, my business and personal email accounts.
You're doing it in Outlook in Office 365 automatically, but you know what?
It's included in 365.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally the reason I went to it. 25 megabyte attachment. You probably have the same features. You're just paying twice for the same stuff.
I mean, I'm only paying $4 a month, and the Exchange, I don't know, like the Exchange support is fantastic.
But just think when you have 50 people under you, $4 a month, that adds up.
Three people. Yeah,
but I can actually get multiple. It might even be infinite number of email addresses under my Exchange plan. I actually don't know how it's different. And
Sandy, what do you use for email?
I do use Office 365.
And you set it up so it's under your presentation whiz.
Exactly. And my business partners each have their own presentation whiz email address. It works very, very well.
And you don't pay extra for that, those extra addresses.
Well, they're under my business essentials plan.
Okay.
If I want to add more, yes, then I either have to change plans or pay.
So here's the deal. Office 365, it's a virtual or a cloud-based Exchange server. It's a full Exchange server. I think it's phenomenal. It's one of the biggest reasons we moved to it. 25 megabyte attachments to all emails, 50 gigabyte inbox. And I will tell you it's 50 gigs because I did hit the limit. Which is probably not a good statement now that I say it out loud. And the ability to set up your email on virtually any device, a desktop, iOS, Android, mobile device, any mobile device. It's web-based as well.
It is.
In addition, if something goes wrong, you just say delete account and reinstall account and everything comes back. I think it's cool. I was just reading, because I'm trying to figure out this new Office 365 business plan. So I was actually reading through the enterprise ones, kind of comparing them. It said, and one of the things I said, that the enterprise level has email attachments that are up to 150 megabytes. I actually reread it twice going, this has to be a typo, like 15, no, 25. No. It says 150 megabyte email attachments, which I think would be a little crazy.
Well, that's within your organization.
Oh, is that what it is?
I'm sure of it. Yes, because
I don't know. It just said email attachments because I went back to the other one, the new bundle one. It says 25 or small business premium one. It says 25 megabytes. Jump over to the enterprise. Anyways, I think the email is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about this? Teams. Anybody using Teams? Have you guys used the Teams?
No. Only aware of it. Never used it.
Tell us what it is.
It's newer. It's totally new. It's basically, it's Microsoft's answer to... oh my gosh, what's the one where it's more like a threaded IM chat back and forth in business?
Slack.
Slack, thank you. It's kind of their answer to Slack in that it incorporates a lot of that type of communication. It's now included in every Office 365 subscription. We've used it for certain projects like that need a dedicated calendar or a dedicated OneNote for collaboration. The big thing with it is it can be shared with anybody outside of your organization. So we're using it now for, as a matter of fact, our upcoming guest speaker. I'm going to set up a team so that we could put like a, you know, an outline notes there because everybody could access it. I think it's pretty cool. For our internal staff, we use groups, which is a whole nother Office 365 thing. The coolest feature there is that a group can become like a central email. So like for Box, whenever you get the notification that Box has sent you a file, we just have a central email address for all of our Box login. So it's one, you know, whatever you call the terabyte pro level account. We have one email address for Box, and we set up a group with that name. So in Outlook, everybody has their groups, and it's literally just called Project Files, I think. It's like a central inbox. Everybody gets the notification that a file showed up. So I think it's got some cool business communication options. Anyways, Teams is cool.
So that's replacing Skype. I didn't know that. I just wanted to clarify. Yeah,
I don't know what that means, though. Right. I really don't. Okay.
Well, I just wanted to.
But it just means you got to get a new name.
A new name, right.
I love renaming things.
There's a difference between Skype, which everybody probably used, you know, a few years ago, and then Skype for Business. You have to have Office 365 in order to have Skype for Business. And I rarely use it, only for those clients, of course, who have Office 365 and Microsoft calls.
Do you use it for like internal communications? Like when you're working with your project coordinator, do you guys like IM back and forth through Skype?
We don't. We text.
Okay.
Yep. But that's a good idea.
Nolan, do you ever use Skype?
Occasionally to talk to clients. A
Skype
or
for
something.
Business to clarify.
Not really. No. I mean, I have once or twice, but it's not.
You do them every month with Microsoft.
That's right. Yes, that's the every once in a while. So,
oh, and that's comical with how it never works and doesn't
work.
Never
works. Yeah, exactly. All right.
See, it works for me all the time. I never have a problem.
It does for me as well. I have no problem. I don't know.
I know I'm in the majority. I like Skype for Business. I also like regular Skype when I'm traveling overseas. I use Skype to call people all the time when I'm on Wi-Fi. Yeah, we use Skype all the time. I mean, it's like literally omnipresent. It tells me, you know, the presence, who's in the studio, who's not. We send messages back and forth. Hey, I mean, I literally, you know, I'm sitting in my office and on the other side of the wall is our project coordinator. I'll just type a message instead of yelling through the studio. And we transfer files through Skype. Skype is really cool for file transfer. If you ever use, Sandy, you might use that. If you guys ever want to send a proof, you just literally drag and drop it. It shows up on the other person. They just double click it and it opens
up. Very cool.
So there's a lot we didn't talk about, which we're not going to get into every single thing. Oh, yeah. But there's Quick Starter. Actually, we did mention that a little bit.
That's only worth a mention, though.
Exactly. There's collaboration, which we're going to talk about more later on a different podcast. Screen recording. What else?
Well, on the screen recording, do you know about this one, Sandy? The Office Mix thing?
Yeah. Well, it switched from Office Mix add-in to be all those capabilities are built in.
Yeah. So Office Mix is going away sometime soon, officially, but they just took the best features and put them right into Office, into PowerPoint. But yeah, I don't know. You know, I think I have a blog post coming out that explains how to turn it on because it's like there, but you got to know where to go find it.
I think accessibility is a really good one we didn't talk about. Office 365 just offers more accessible features. We've mentioned photos, image descriptions, which are hilarious, but there's accessible templates, that type of thing. I don't want to go into it.
You know what? Going back to the OneDrive thing, because this is kind of a OneDrive Outlook thing, a newer feature is if you have a large attachment, it actually just brings it up anything over, I think, 3 megabytes, but it says, do you want to send this email with a download link?
Yes.
And if you say yes, it just uploads the file to your OneDrive account. And the email goes through and it says, here it is, and click this link to download it. And it just downloads it from your OneDrive account. So again, you're using OneDrive without the OneDrive interface, but that's kind of cool. I tested it. We did a 200 meg file. I sent it to somebody and took a second for the email to go out because it's literally uploading it. They got it. They clicked the link. They're like, yeah, I got it.
So how is that difference? Now, sometimes clients will email me something and they'll think they attached the file, but really it's a cloud document. I cannot access it because it's on their server, even though they have Office 365. So that's different.
That might be internal.
That's what you're describing something completely different. A literal
this
link
is now,
created. Okay.
Yep.
That's
great. I'll send you both one. Just see what it is. It's actually really easy. Just add an attachment that's oversized and it does it. But that's another Office 365 thing. I think that'll become more of a standard.
I like it.
You know, there's that web page. Who on Microsoft sent us that that really cool web page? We should probably end with that. You know which one I'm talking about?
With all the...
So a mystery person at Microsoft was really, really awesome and gave us a web page called the Office 365 Change Management Survival Guide. I'm opening it up right now. I'll put a link in the show notes. It was a compilation of links on all the Office 365 details. So if you want to know anything about Office 365, I was like, wow, this is really cool stuff. It's actually a TechNet article technically, but it's just links to everything. Well, hey, let's wrap up. A few years ago, Adobe moved to subscription-based for its software. Now, virtually every creative I know uses Adobe Creative Cloud. And overall, I think everyone's happy. And I think that we get more for our investment. How much we pay them, we get more apps and more options. Shortly after Adobe's move, Microsoft revealed Office 365 as its subscription option for software. But unlike Adobe, Microsoft continues to offer all of its apps as a direct purchase and perpetual license if you choose it. But those installs kind of miss out on, like we were talking about, new features, maybe the new services and the extras that really go beyond all the Office apps themselves. Subscription software, it's not going to fade away. I believe purchasing software for life of use of a license, that's a mouthful, I think that's what's fading away. And today, we only talked about the Office 365 features that we use in our design studios. I'm certain there are many more features, many more options we do not use, didn't mention, and well, they're going to be important to some of you out there. So it's great because it shows that Office 365 has a large offering. I believe it has improved the technical workflow of our design studio without a significant investment in extra right. IT costs or headaches. So Office 365, there's a lot of features out there. If you're using PowerPoint, it's probably a good thing to move to just for the PowerPoint features, and it's all good. Hey, Sandy, you have a tech tip?
I do. I have a couple. First, I just wanted to mention, you know, if we've got with the holiday season, Echo, Amazon Echo is out there, Google Home, all these personal electronic assistants are really, really on top of mind. Well, 4 years ago, before any of this came out, I participated in crowdsourcing fundraising for a little robot that was supposed to be the greatest personal assistant ever, called Jibo, J-I-B-O. It's this adorable personal assistant.
You are so the target market though.
I
remember it's like the one that has like the big face on like a white body, right?
Yep, white body. I think there's a black body. It moves, it interacts with you. It's very, very personable. However, it's not very smart yet. The CEO of the company says, we're kind of in a beta test mode, I guess. She says, consider it a baby that will grow. So in addition to my Jibo, which I will keep because it's just so darn cute, I have to buy the other personal assistants. So that's my report on Jibo. A really cute thing, not very smart. Also, I just wanted to give a shout out to Leah, also known as P-Spice. She is an amazing animator and does some wonderful tutorials on her blog. But she recently released a tutorial on morphing completely different shapes and photos from one to the other. So, for example, I have a logo and I want to morph that logo vector graphic into a completely different photo. She has a workaround for it. It's really great.
Oh, cool. I'll have to go look at that.
I played with it a little bit. You got to play with it. It's got a couple limitations, right. But it's cool.
There's a link in the notes.
Yeah. My pro and tech tip is everypixel.com. Julie Turberg turned me onto this. It is a search engine. It's an aggregator search engine for stock imagery. It does not search every single image site, but it searches a lot of them. And there are a lot of filters and things you can turn on. So if you're looking for, you know, image of whatever, you know, you just go there and see where you can find it across multiple different sites, some free, some, you know, paid. And those are filters you can turn on. So it saves you having to go to Getty, to iStock, to Shutterstock, to all those different places. It's got some cool things. It also, you can also, It has You can set empty space, you know, searches, you know, looking for images with empty space and where that is. And it even has this AI thing that will, for any image, it will tell you how, I don't know what the terminology is, but how, not clever, but how, like how appropriate the image is or how sophisticated or professional the image is, I think. It's kind of like an anti-tacky sort of,
oh, that's awesome. System.
And who knows how they do it, but there's a lot going on there. So it's a cool site.
So mine is, and this one just kind of came up, is to double click the animation pane top, I guess you'd call it toolbar area. So I don't know if everybody even knows this. I was surprised when we talked about this that it wasn't known. When you're in PowerPoint, you open the animation pane, you can actually click and tear that off of PowerPoint and put it over on like your second monitor, which is what I do a lot. So I have a large animation pane. I just move it to the second monitor. So now I've got a much larger animation pane to work with. I can see long timelines. I can make it taller to see, you know, because I don't have to worry about the PowerPoint UI being in the way. So I get a little more room out of it. And I had mentioned to somebody on a Microsoft call that, you know, the problem was is, it's hard to get it redocked. You kind of got to grab it and move it around till it snaps in place. And somebody just said, well, why don't you just double click the top of it? And I said, I don't know what that means. Yeah. And you know, it's really awesome.
It does.
So everybody should open up PowerPoint, open up the animation pane, tear it away, and then just double click in what would be the top area. Cause there's not really a defined area and it snaps it back in place. It's like this little hidden feature.
Another example very, very of Microsoft cool. not communicating features to us.
I think that one's gonna have a cool hidden secret.
It's really cool.
So it's like a hidden thing. Like when you have an animation, you know, it shows you the timeline in seconds down below and there's a little drop down area. You're like, well, what's it going to change to? Minutes, milliseconds? It's just a zoom in and out tool for the animation bar. So you can see the visual animations zoom in and out. It's like another little hidden thing. Oh, there's two tips. There are
very
two
good.
Tips about the animation pane. Okay, I'm done with tips.
Can't handle anymore.
Hey, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services design studio team focused on presentation design. If you are looking for presentation messaging, design, show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at tlccreative.com and the blog, thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe there for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're looking for presentation training or data visualization training for your organizations, give me a call. That's what we do.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild website at presentationguild.org, or just search for Sandra Johnson. It's just...
And who are you?
I'm searching for that right now. S-A-A-A-A-A-N.
The key got stuck on my typewriter. Okay. Or just search for Sandra Johnson at your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.